You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rocky Bellbell Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Bellbell.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Thursday, June 12th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. So glad you could join us today, and also joining us by way of our virtual studio in beautiful Colorado, the land of legalization. We've got our own Priscilla Seibin on the line. Priscilla, how are you doing today? I'm doing fantastic. Love the new backdrop. We'll get you a 420 radio version of that as soon as we can. How are things in Colorado? Looking nice out there?
Things are looking on the up and up now. Things are looking on the up and up. It's a good day.
Yes, it is. And Priscilla will be with us after our first break to talk about the 420 radio headline news, where we've got a couple of stories coming out of Colorado and Washington, as we are always going to have, it seems, on our news segment. These involve taxation and the legality of bans in Washington State. And then in Colorado, specifically Denver, we got some problems with the cops there we're going to take a look at. New York is looking at becoming the 23rd medical marijuana state. That might happen next week. And we've got some lawsuits from Hershey's about medicated edibles and a new study out of Europe. So we'll get to that right after our first break. Also on the show today, we've got more highlights from the Dallas-Fort Worth Texas Regional Normal Conference. At the end of the show today in the Radical Rant segment, we'll be playing the awards ceremony where I was awarded the Hardest Working Man in Marijuana Activism Award. I was very humbled by that award. Thank you so much, DFW Normal, for the recognition. You'll get to see my speech at the end of the show. Also, today is Thursday, and every other Thursday we visit with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition for our segment, Cops Say Legalize Drugs. Joining us today, we'll have retired Detective Sergeant Ted Nelson, who will tell us why he thinks drugs should be legalized and why marijuana prohibition is a failure. Also, in hour two today in Toker Talk Radio, a couple of great videos, and Toker Talk Radio is going to go way long, folks, because we got to fit all of these videos in. First, we'll have Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition's Ann Lee, the 80-year-old mother of Richard Lee, the founder of Oaksterdam and the proponent of Prop 19 back in 2010. Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition were represented there well at the Texas Regional Normal Conference, as well as the Texas GOP Convention. Ann Lee will tell you all about that in Hour 2. Also in Hour 2, we're going to show the patients panel at the Texas Regional Normal Conference, where I can't remember if it was four or five, I think it was five patients, gave their stories of fighting for cannabis medicine in the Lone Star State. And of course, we'll have Behind the Headlines. We're going to take a look in Behind the Headlines today about the Florida race for medical marijuana, which just got an injection of cash into the anti-medical marijuana side. And we've got our Daily Toker Tunes, where Chuck Diesel will be joining us in Hour 2 with some music from Nas and Damian Marley. What an interesting collaboration that will be. Plus, coming up right in this next commercial break, make sure you stay tuned and pay attention to the commercials, a great new pistachios ad from Stephen Colbert that makes a nod to Colorado's marijuana legalization. All that's coming up here on the Russ Bellbell Show, live every weekday, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, with replays every 3 hours after that at, well, not every 3 hours, replays at 6 and 9, I should say, a.m. and p.m. We're back with the news right after this.
To the Russ Bellbell Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally.
The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit MJBA.net to join today. That's MJBA.net. 420radio.org presents The Russ Belville Show, starring Russ Belville from Portland, Oregon. The Russ Belville Show is the net's most comprehensive marijuana news program, featuring headlines, in-depth news analysis, new music, timely interviews, and radical rants from one of America's most prolific reformers, airing live weekdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, with replays at 3, 6, and 9 Pacific, every weekday at 420radio.
The Pistachio. Green, natural, and available without prescription in all 50 states. He's fine.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Priscilla Simon.
Hi, this is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, June 12th, 2014. Taxation of marijuana by the states of Colorado and Washington amounts to a violation of the Fifth Amendment. That's the stand taken by activist marijuana attorneys in those states who are suing to have those states' marijuana taxation regulations declared null and void. In Colorado, attorney Rob Corey argues that when growers and sellers pay Colorado marijuana taxes, they effectively incriminate themselves of the federal crimes of marijuana cultivation and trafficking. Quote, "In my mind, overtaxation is just as bad as prohibition," end quote, Mr. Corey told Denver 9's News. In Washington, attorney Douglas Hyatt, who opposed Washington's I-502 legislation initiative, is presenting a similar argument. His client, a medical marijuana dispensary owner, is being prosecuted by Washington State for criminal distribution of marijuana and failure to pay taxes in it. Mr. Hyatt argues that paying the taxes would incriminate his client on the distribution charge, thus violating Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination. Justice officials in Colorado and Washington dismissed the suits as frivolous, with little chance of being upheld.
Sorry about that, Priscilla. I messed up on the pronoun there, his Fifth Amendment rights. But yeah, this is a little disturbing to me, right? Because part of what's selling marijuana legalization in the other states is taking a look at the millions of dollars Colorado's bringing in taxes, and soon to be Washington will bring in taxes. If these suits are successful, the states of Colorado and Washington won't be able to tax marijuana, and no other state afterward would be able to tax marijuana until the federal government decides that it's legal. Now, fortunately, there's already been numerous Supreme Court decisions that have found that, yes, indeed, states can tax things that are illegal. That's how they've been able to bring tax charges against marijuana producers and sellers, even when it wasn't legal, even as it's been illegal for years and years and years. And the folks looking at this in both Washington and Colorado, the legal experts, don't really expect much to come out of these challenges. In Washington State, Allison Holcomb from the ACLU, who wrote I-502, points out that it's always been that the tax that's going on in Washington State is not a tax on marijuana, it's a tax on sales. and that when the state turns in its sales revenue, it doesn't have to tell anybody where that revenue came from, and therefore it wouldn't be a Fifth Amendment violation. We shall see how these suits pan out, and we'll give you the updates just as soon as they are settled.
Right. Wenatchee is the battleground for determining whether local governments can ban the soon to open legal pot shops in Washington state. A local businessman seeking to open a pot shop is suing the city over its zoning code, which states that all Wenatchee businesses must comply with federal law. The mayor of Wenatchee has begged the city council to strike the word federal from the code, but the council decided 4-3 to affirm the code language as is. The mayor fears the city's legal costs in defending such ban, which could resolve the state and federal conflicts over legal marijuana businesses if the case makes it all the way to the Supreme Court. The council meets tonight to decide whether to follow through with defense of the lawsuit. The state attorney general has issued a non-binding opinion that localities do have the right to ban legal pot shops, which at least 10 Washington cities have already done, and another 69 cities and 12 counties have enacted temporary pot shop moratoriums.
Boy, this completely goes against the point of passing I-502 in Washington state. If Wenatchee's going to come here and challenge this and make it settled that the places that localities can ban pot shops, it goes against the stated objective of I-502, which was to rein in the black market, which was to eliminate the black market eventually and allow the state to collect taxes on the market that exists, the marijuana market. If localities are allowed to ban these pot shops, then that doesn't mean the people in those cities stop smoking pot. It just means they continue with the black market dealers, or they try to find a way to get medical so that they can get into the medical marijuana dispensaries. These localities have such a small view of what's going on in marijuana legalization. It's all NIMBYism. It's all not in my backyardism, NIMBYism. They just fear the stereotypes and the prejudice and the bigotry that has been calculated against marijuana consumers for so many years, that they really are just banning something that's in their imaginations. If they would take a moment and look at the places in Colorado that have embraced these pot shops and actually seen the taxation, the results of which have helped improve neighborhoods, helped reduce crime. Now in Colorado, Priscilla, if I'm not mistaken, you do have the power to, it's explicit that they can ban pot shops, but that's not the case in Washington, right?
Right, yeah, I know that some cities in particular have banned pot shops, and so what the stores do is they end up posting up at the county line in particular, at the city line, you know, which it follows code and zoning, you know, in accordance with it. But yeah, it's explicitly stated you can ban it if you don't want it, if it's, you know, around schools and stuff. You know, we have the best in mind for everybody.
Yeah, it's interesting how these two states will pan out, with Colorado having the explicit ban and Washington not having an explicit ban. Let's hope that the Washington suit doesn't work and we are able to open pot shops all across the Evergreen State.
Right. And coming home, officers with the Denver Police Department have recently been plagued with violence and child porn charges. Denver Police Chief Robert White is blaming alcohol abuse. In March, a spokesperson for the police department was suspended when photos of nude women were found on his police cell phone. In April, a detective working vice was allegedly caught soliciting prostitution. In May, a police officer resigned after accusations of his possession of over 20 child pornography videos. In June, an officer was charged with trespassing and child abuse over a brawl that occurred at a detective's home. The detective was charged with brandishing his weapon during the fight. And on Sunday, another detective was arrested on charges of domestic violence, child abuse, reckless endangerment, and prohibited use of weapons.
Wow, Priscilla, you got some cops there in Denver, huh?
Jeez, people being menaced to society. You're supposed to protect us, guys.
Yeah, really, not supposed to be committing the crimes. I love the Denver police chief blaming this on alcohol abuse. Yeah, it's got to be the alcohol abuse. It couldn't be, you know, really poor hiring practices and background checks, could it? No, got to be the booze.
Let's get their screening process.
I have an idea. How about we hire more pot smoking cops instead of drinking cops? Maybe we can get a little less child abuse and child pornography going on there in Denver. Man,
yeah, you get high and forget about that stuff.
I guess so. What a terrible, terrible story. And again, we'll keep tabs on this, see what happens as these guys get prosecuted.
Right. New York may become the 23rd medical marijuana state next week, according to the bill's Senate sponsor. Quote, "We will have a final product in time for the end of this legislative session," end quote, said Senator Dianne Savino as three-way talks between the Senate, House, and governor's office began Wednesday evening. Governor Andrew Cuomo says he supports the idea of medical marijuana, but still has some reservations about Senator Savino's bill. Under Savino's Compassionate Care Act, patients would qualify under the most common conditions covered in medical marijuana states, like cancer, HIV, AIDS, and epilepsy, but others, such as glaucoma, chronic pain, and severe nausea, will not qualify. No medicated candy or soda will be allowed, and minor patients will be barred from smoking marijuana. Patients will not be allowed to grow their own medicine and must shop at state dispensaries, which will limit purchases to 2.5 ounces of marijuana per month, taxed at 7%.
Yeah, it's more that East Coast, no homegrown, severely limited medical marijuana they're trying to get passed there in New York. They think, I believe next Friday is the end of their legislative session. So they got the rest of this week and then next week to get this passed. But there's so much political pressure, what with all the kids with the CBD oil and the patients coming to the state house and fighting for this. It's passed the assembly. I think it's passed in the New York Assembly like 5 times already. The hiccup is always getting it past the Senate, but now Savino says she's got the votes there in the Senate to get this passed. I think Andrew Cuomo is probably going to sign this. It's got enough restriction in it, you know, not allowing chronic pain, glaucoma, or nausea, no home grow, 2.5 ounces per month limits. It's just perfect for that East Coast Box Canyon medical marijuana style that we've become used to.
Yeah, that's a step in the right direction. Hershey's, the Pennsylvania candy bar maker, is suing Colorado edibles manufacturer and a Washington medical marijuana dispensary for trademark infringement. The suits involve the manufacture and sales of marijuana-infused products that bear a striking resemblance to Hershey's non-medicated candy bars, including Reefer's Peanut Butter Cup, a ripoff of Reese's, Mr. Dank Bar, like Mr. Good Bar, Ganja Joy, mimicking Almond Joy, Hash Heath, copying the Heath Bar, and Dabby Patty, similar to the York Peppermint Patty. Hershey's complains the packaging illegally infringes on their trademarks and may lead someone to, quote, inadvertently ingest the medicated products. A spokesperson for the Washington dispensary claims, quote, no reasonable juror, end quote, would ever believe a dispensary that sells only medicated products would think they're buying an unmedicated Hershey's product.
All right. So this is just rank stupidity on the part of these people that are making these edibles. One of the big problems we've got, in fact, I was just reading in Alaska, where the anti-legalization forces up there called Big Marijuana, Big Problem, are pointing out BHO and medicated candy bars as the two biggest scaremongering complaints they've got against marijuana legalization. And with all the hype and fright over kids mistaking a medicated candy for a real candy, it certainly doesn't help anything when you're ripping off the trademarks of established candy bars to make your medicated edibles. This is just no good for the legalization movement, no good for the medical movement, and I certainly hope Hershey prevails in this so that other edibles makers will finally learn the lesson. Don't steal trademarks and try to mimic real candy bars.
Yeah. A new study out of Europe shows that the children of strict, overbearing parents are more likely to smoke, drink, and toke. The European Institute of Studies on Prevention interviewed over 7,000 adolescents from Spain, Sweden, the Czech Republic, the UK, Slovenia, and Portugal to determine which type of parenting style best kept children from initiating drug use. Quote, our results support the idea that extremes are not effective, lead researcher Amador Calafat told the journal Drug and Alcohol Dependence. Quote, neither authoritarianism nor absence of control and affection, end quote. When it comes to protecting children from drugs, Calafat explained that parents who reasoned with their kids about abstaining from drugs had the best outcomes, and that, quote, a good relationship with children is paramount.
What? What? Talking to your kids like they're intelligent and they can understand reason works better than just say no and grounding them? Priscilla, who would have thought such a thing, that you could talk to your kids about drugs?
Oh, geez, that's only like logic, right? Adult logic. You got to find a balance somewhere. And I'm glad somebody found it.
I'm glad.
Either the other, no bueno.
That's right. Oh, but speaking of bueno, it's 420 right out there in Colorado. You've got to take your union-mandated safety break. Wouldn't want to keep you from it, Priscilla.
I appreciate that, Russ.
All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow when we come back.
Bye-bye.
Behind the headlines, we're going to take a look at Florida's medical marijuana campaign. You're listening to 420radio.org, and this is the Russ Belville Show.
Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420.
My wife is 46 years old, and she has a fairly advanced stage of Parkinson's disease. She's having a very difficult time, pretty much wheelchair-bound now. If Joan tried marijuana now, she might have a tremendous improvement in her quality of life. Knowing there's a medication that could help my wife, but that medication is illegal here in New York, is agonizing. It's causing me a tremendous amount of grief. Governor Cuomo, patients have waited long enough for relief. Please support the Compassionate Care Act.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 22 after the hour, and time for us to go behind the headlines, where millions of dollars are now heating up the Florida medical marijuana campaign. The fight to pass a constitutional amendment to legalize the use of medical marijuana in Florida heated up this week with the injection of millions of dollars to the anti-medical marijuana side. Sheldon Adelson, the billionaire Las Vegas casino tycoon who donates lavishly to Republican causes, wrote out a $2.5 million check to the Drug-Free Florida Committee opposing Question 2, the medical marijuana constitutional amendment, on November's ballot. Without Mr. Adelson's money, the anti-medical marijuana campaign, backed by the Drug-Free America Foundation, had just $200,000 in funding. Mostly from founder Mel Sembler, the longtime Republican fundraiser and founder of Straight Inc., a torturous teen drug rehab program that ran from 1976 to 1993. Straight Inc. is described by its survivors as, quote, a facility that used coercive thought reform, aka mind control and brainwashing, public humiliation, sleep and food deprivation, extremely harsh confrontational tactics, kidnapping, isolation, and emotional, mental, physiological, psychological, verbal, and physical abuse to forcibly break us down, end quote. Indeed, Straight Inc. was convicted of false imprisonment in one lawsuit, ordering $220,000 in damages to one man, and in another lawsuit, ordered to pay $721,000 in damages to a Florida woman who claimed Straight Inc. staff assaulted her and denied her her health care. That's the man who's behind the committee to stop medical marijuana in Florida. Now, Mr. Adelson's money is doubled by Orlando personal injury attorney John Morgan, who has bankrolled most of the $5 million raised by People United for Medical Marijuana, the group supporting Question 2. The constitutional amendment needs 60% of the vote to pass under Florida law. Most recent polls show support among registered voters tracing in the high 80% range, with Quinnipiac pegging support at 88% among all voters and 93% among Democrats. While Mr. Morgan denies it, the gubernatorial politics in Florida are playing a large role in the funding of the medical marijuana campaign. Mr. Morgan is the employer and backer of Charlie Crist, the former Republican governor, who lost his office to the current Republican governor, Rick Scott. Mr. Crist has since changed parties to Democrat and is running against Governor Scott to reclaim the governor's office. Governor Scott is a longtime opponent of medical marijuana. Mr. Crist is a high-profile supporter of medical marijuana. Mr. Adelson, the Republican megafunder, whose largesse attracted most GOP hopefuls for president to lobby him for support back in March, clearly would prefer Rick Scott stays in office. Political observers in Florida have intimated that Mr. Morgan's support of medical marijuana is a ploy designed to attract younger, more progressive voters to the polls who will likely support Mr. Crist. Mr. Morgan vehemently denies such Machiavellian politics, explaining that his support for the issue comes from his personal experiences watching family and friends battling cancer and other ailments. No one has yet divined Mr. Adelson's reasoning for opposing medical marijuana, aside from the assumption it would help Governor Scott's Republican gubernatorial campaign by dampening voter enthusiasm for the issue. Meanwhile, the Florida legislature has become the ninth state to approve a bill legalizing the use of cannabidiol oil under strict conditions. These so-called CBD-only medical marijuana bills have been signed into law in eight states, providing politicians there some relief from the charges of indifference and cruelty toward children suffering from intractable epilepsy. In Pennsylvania, where Governor Tom Corbett has long opposed attempts to legalize medical marijuana, his support of a CBD-only bill garnered him headlines reading, "Governor Corbett changes his mind on medical marijuana." Governor Scott has indicated he will sign Florida's CBD-only bill, perhaps in hopes that it will mitigate some of the compassion voters may feel for passing more comprehensive whole plant medical marijuana in November. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with retired Detective Sergeant Ted Nelson from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition in our Cops Say Legalize Drugs segment.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest. I'm Radical Russ Belville, and I want to thank you for listening to 420 Radio. We couldn't survive without you and our sponsors, and I'd like you to check out one of our prime sponsors, the National Cannabis Coalition. I've been working with NCC since June of 2012, and I'm proud to be part of the team they have assembled. National Cannabis Coalition is building the partnerships with reformers, lawmakers, and industry we need to be successful. Visit the National Cannabis Coalition website at nationalcannabiscoalition.com or the easier-to-remember ncc420.com. That's where you'll get the exclusive first look at my radical rants, as well as informative articles from the nation's top cannabis pundits. Visit ncc420.com today, and if you have your phone handy, text Russ to 420-420 to support NCC and 420 Radio. It's a free text message that helps us help you end adult marijuana prohibition. Learn more at ncc420.com, and thanks for supporting independent marijuana legalization public radio. Cannabis Cure TV with Greg DeHote from Sussex, England. Replaying Thursdays at 12 Pacific on 420radio.org.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message: cops say legalize drugs.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Half past, and we are getting online here with our guest, retired Detective Sergeant Ted Nelson from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, the lobby that fights to end prohibition and to educate the public and law enforcement officials on the need to legalize drugs. Ted, are you there? Welcome to the show.
Yes, Russ, I'm here. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you here. We love speaking to law enforcement officials who worked on the front lines and who understand what's going on in the reality of the drug war. According to your bio here, it says you worked 25 years with the Michigan State Police. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience working on narcotics cases and what that taught you about the drug war?
Well, you know, I started my career when I was 22 years old and began my career in the city of Detroit, working traffic and patrol mostly. And then as I went through my career, I became involved in working on a narcotics team called Interdiction and Conspiracy Enforcement, which was involved in the trying to interdict drugs coming into the state of Michigan through different means, whether it be by package carriers or by airports or train stations or things like that. And what I learned, you know, from doing this is it was a battle that we were trying to make a difference in, but it seemed like we were picking up the mules in the business, people who were used to transport the drugs and the people who were running the drug businesses. It was very difficult to reach them. So it was a cat and mouse game, and it's been going on for many, many years. And over time, I realized that this is not really an effective policy dealing with this issue.
Right. At least as if you're going to judge its effectiveness by reducing drug use and the attendant problems of drug use. But if you look at it from the point of view of police departments, it can be quite lucrative. It also says here you trained officers in asset seizure and forfeiture in the state of Michigan. Can you explain how the drug war turns into policing for profit under that?
Well, the legislature thought that by taking the profit out of selling and distributing drugs would not maybe be a deterrent, and also but would give law enforcement more tools to deal with the enforcement of drug laws. So I was one of the principal instructors in asset seizure and forfeiture for the state, and I went around and taught this for a couple of years to many police officers. The intent at the time was to try to take the profit out of the illegal drug distribution business, which seemed logical at the time. The problem with that type of approach is that there are some police departments and some officers who really took it farther than what it was intended to do. And the law was written to take assets that were generated by drug dealing. And what happened a lot of times, the officers, especially in the southern states, would stop young kids coming down to Florida for spring break. The kids would have some cash, they'd have some marijuana, and they would take the money along with the drugs under the forfeiture law. And really, that's not what it was intended to do. And there are some small cities down on I-75 that make a very good amount of money doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've heard so many stories from people who've been affected by asset forfeiture. And I always thought that one of the cruelest parts of it was your cash is seized, it's guilty until proven innocent, and then how do you hire a lawyer to get it back when they took your cash? It seems kind of a catch-22, doesn't it?
Well, see, the forfeiture was a civil action and not a criminal action. It was a civil action separate from the criminal action. So the burden is different on a civil action. Mm-hmm. The burden of proof is on a civil than it is a criminal. So it put basically the burden on the person who you took the money from to show that it was legitimate. And, you know, the intention of the law was to take assets or proceeds. The problem was, police officers started to, when they did a search warrant on houses, what they would do is instead of trying to determine which assets were derived from selling drugs. They just kind of took a lot of things and then let the prosecutor work out that case along with the criminal case and negotiate the whole thing. So what happened is it got to be where drug teams were taking furniture and televisions and basically emptying out houses. And I don't think that's what the law was intended to do, but some people were utilizing it in that way.
Yeah, one of those unintended consequences.
We're
speaking with retired Detective Sergeant Ted Nelson from the Michigan State Police with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You can learn more about LEAP at leap.cc. Now, Ted, I also noticed in your bio here that your career spanned from being a uniformed trooper, you know, make the small pot arrest, all the way to working with FBI and U.S. Customs on international marijuana trafficking. I've long had the theory that if the violence associated with the big-time marijuana trafficking was happening in America, like it did under Prohibition with Al Capone, people might understand what's really happening here, but it seems like we've outsourced all that violence to Mexico. Do you think the U.S. public has a good idea, really, what's going on in Mexico and how this is how the drug war has turned into a bloody massacre there?
No, I don't think they consider it to be their problem. I don't think on the case, there was a case I worked with the U.S. Customs and FBI involving a distributor out of Mexico, and then he would distribute the marijuana through Texas on the southern border there and Brownsville. And in this organization that he had, six of his, I would say, mules, who would bring drugs to Michigan. Michigan was one of the destinations. Six of those people were executed during our investigation of this case. His name is Juan Garza, is the individual who was running this organization, and it took several years to finally to bring him down, several years, and a lot of man hours and a lot of Title III situations there with wiretaps and things. And he was eventually arrested and eventually executed by the federal government under the law regarding narcotic-related murders. And he was actually executed 2 weeks after Timothy McVeigh was, who was more well-known, obviously. But that organization was very violent, and several individuals died, and it was marijuana. It was all about distributing marijuana. And in my career, I found that marijuana distribution was bigger than any other drug distribution. Marijuana was the most profitable. It brought about the most, they had the most customers, let's face it. Marijuana has the most customer base out there.
Absolutely.
So.
Now, do you feel that, you know, the legalization that's happening in Colorado and Washington and proposed for Alaska and Oregon is going to have a major dent in these trafficking organizations? I mean, our opponents like to pretend that it means they're going to hide in the forests and grow more, but don't you think this would have a pretty devastating effect on their financing?
Definitely. Just marijuana alone would have a big effect on the cartels. However, if you just legalize marijuana and you leave the other drugs illegal, now you have them pushing those other drugs on young people and on to distribute them and to use them. So LEAP doesn't believe that the policy should just be legalizing marijuana. It should be legalizing all drugs and dealing it with a health issue more so than a criminal issue. The price it is, the cost to try to deal with drug distribution and prohibition is something that I don't believe we can continue to maintain the cost, imprisonment and enforcement, and I don't think it's effective as far as dealing with the problem. Drug use is not drug abuse, and I think until people realize that and look at this in a different light, that the solutions to this problem will not come.
Another part of your bio points out that you race Siberian huskies and you have a kennel of 25 dogs. Pretty impressive there. One of the effects of the war on drugs that we've seen is this militarization of police and an over-reliance on shooting canines whenever they encounter them in drug raid situations. What would you like to see happen as far as police forces and how they deal with family pets in these raid situations?
Well, I've done several raids myself, and we always, whenever we briefed for a raid, we always talked about whether there was going to be any dogs on the premises, and we never talked a lot about killing dogs. It was more or less, if there is a dog on the premises, and it is considered, could be a threat, that often we would carry a fire extinguisher to use on the dog, which would usually send them running and hiding and not really want to deal with the people coming in. I've never been involved with a raid of shooting any animal. I'm not saying that there sometimes that if you are being attacked by a dog, that obviously that would be a consideration, but there are people who keep dogs for the purposes of this, and that puts police in a difficult situation. As an animal lover, that does contribute to my difficulty with shooting animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just seems to me that we've taught meter readers and postal workers how to deal with dogs, and maybe we could have better training for our police officers on how to deal with them. I don't know personally, I've never been a police officer, but it seems to me that training is lacking.
I agree, and I think there are some measures that could be utilized, and a lot of dogs, there are certain dogs that have a reputation for being more dangerous, and I think that in the officer's mind also plants the seed that this dog can do some damage, and some of these dogs don't deserve that reputation. Luckily, Siberian Huskies don't have a reputation for attacking people. They're very, very, they'll pretty much go with anybody, anywhere, but they look like they might hurt you by their blue eyes and their coloring, and people sometimes think they're wolves for some reason. But they're not a very aggressive dog by nature.
Well, retired Detective Sergeant Ted Nelson from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, thank you so much for your service and for standing up for the legalization of drugs. We appreciate it.
Russ, thanks for having me on your show, and I appreciate being on.
All right. Thank you very much. And when we come back, we're going to have more coverage of the Dallas-Fort Worth Normal Conference, the Texas Regional Normal Conference, and the award ceremonies where I actually got an award. You'll hear my speech right after this.
Twenty Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups. New Approach Oregon is a coalition of Oregon citizens who believe that treating marijuana use as a crime has failed, costing taxpayers millions in law enforcement resources. Our approach will regulate, tax, and legalize marijuana for adults in Oregon. We can move Oregon forward and create new revenue for critical services. Visit our website at newapproachoregon.com or our page on Facebook at New Approach Oregon. Thank you.
You can't handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law. 10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget. Oh, no.
Homosexuality, no. Immorality, generally.
How in the century do you have slurred the meaning of the words we, the people?
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 44 after the hour, and I attended the Texas Regional Normal Conference for the second year in a row, and was very pleasantly surprised at the end when they had an awards ceremony. I had no idea this was coming. They awarded Vincent Lopez, Jody Emery, Andrea Brown, and me. So here is my award at Dallas-Fort Worth Normal. Enjoy.
And we just wanted to use this as an opportunity to thank who I believe is one of the hardest working men in marijuana activism, Mr. Radical Russ Belville.
Wow, well, to quote Sally Field, you like me. You really like me. Thank you, man. This is really cool. I wasn't expecting this. Well, like Sean said, I do this because I can't help it. I have a disorder. I have to be this way. It's always shocking to me to get these kind of, you know, kudos and accolades, and I keep wondering when you're all going to figure out that I'm just making this up as I go along. Really, I have no blueprint for any of this. I'm an old bar band musician. You know, I played in bar bands, and I guess one of the things I learned from that is, you know, standing in front of crowds and, you know, sometimes dealing with drunks actually was a lot of it. But that was valuable in learning how to talk to people and learning about different people, and even if they were a little drunk and obnoxious, how to, you know, get through to them and find some sort of connection so that, you know, at least they didn't hate my band or want to kick my ass in the parking lot or something. So that comes to mind. And I was in the restaurant industry for a long time. My parents managed restaurants, and so I was a busboy and a dishwasher, and those kind of things kind of taught me that, you know, even if your job really sucks, you just got to show up and do it, and you just got to push through it and have that persistence, you know, that we were talking about earlier. And I was in IT. I was a telephone, like, tech support. I kind of started off at the state of Idaho, and that kind of taught me how to listen to people complain and, you know, try to get very upset, angry people who are frustrated with something that's completely illogical to them, computers in this case, right? And be able to kind of mentor them and lead them through how they might have a better working understanding, maybe change that a little bit. It also taught me a lot about state government in a red state. Woo, boy. And then, you know, the moment for me was, and I've told the story before, but the moment for me, and I'd been working in IT for years, and I'd worked my career up to the point where I was getting some pretty good contracts. I was always a contractor, because as a contractor, you don't have to take P-tests. But you also get paid about a third what you're worth. You don't got any 401k or health insurance or retirement, anything like that, right? It's always a six-month existence, trying to hope you get that next contract 6 months later somewhere to do something computer-related. And I'd been working for a long time, and you know, transitioning from the young, irresponsible bar band musician to maybe having a more of a real career and a real life, and I'd gotten married, and it was like, oh, I got to grow up now and be responsible and have a real job and get a house and all those kind of things. So I had this job at a medical device manufacturer. I used to always like to joke that they made Dr. McCoy's medical bed, right? That kind of thing. They made these, though, the real high-tech stuff for, like, the Iraq War and the, you know, the mobile evac, you know, heart monitor things and stuff like that. So I was working for this company, and I was a desktop support guy, and I was, you know, helping, you know, the receptionist find her files and helping the engineer find his backups and those kind of things. And I'd had the job for 2 years and got great reviews. God, they loved me, you know, and after 2 years, the contract ended. IBM bought out the contract, and they're getting rid of all of us IT guys, going to bring in all the IBM guys. But the company liked me so much, one of the divisions was like, hey, look, we got an open spot. We got a full-time position. This thing starts at $75,000 a year. You get a company car, you get a credit card, you get a travel expense account, you get a 401k, you get retirement, you get health care, you know, golden level health care. It was just like, the dream job had come down from heaven for me. It's like, oh, now I finally won't have to worry about running out of gas by the end of the week. I'll finally be able to actually buy groceries, have groceries. That'll be cool. But it had a drug test. Oh, man. Now, I'd never taken a P test because I always believed, you know, P for enjoyment, not for employment. And the only piss test you're going to get from me is for a taste test. So I'd always been, and not from necessarily the fact that I was a pot smoker. I even felt that way before I was a pot smoker. I thought, if we're going to start a business relationship, me working for you, we're not going to start it with you assuming I'm a criminal and thinking I'm guilty until proven innocent. It's a lousy way to start any kind of relationship. So I just never done it as a moral thing, ethical thing. But man, $75,000, company car, credit card, damn. So I made the decision, all right, I'll put my ethics aside for here for a second. I can not smoke pot for a couple months and drink a lot of cranberry juice, and you know, I can do that. So they said, no, Russ, it's a hair test. I said, oh, that's gonna be a problem. And the human resources lady said, oh, no, they'll find some hair. Like, what? I don't know if I know about this. This is so cool. And I went, oh, okay. I said, oh, great. And then I went home and went, shit. All that cranberry juice ain't going to mean nothing on a hair test, right? I've stopped smoking pot for 2 months, but those hair tests, they'll go for, you know, 6 months in some case. I'm screwed. So I got on the internet and I looked up. You can get these shampoos, supposedly, that are going to help cleanse the hair or whatever, right? And the directions are like, all right, you know, soak your hair in white wine vinegar, and then that'll loosen up the follicles, open them up kind of, and then you put the shampoo in, you keep the shampoo in for a half hour, and then you rinse it out, and you can go take your hair test. Like, well, how do I, you know, they're going to get hair from somewhere. It could be my arm, could be my legs. How am I going to... Well, I figured it out. I went to the Winco, it's one of our shopping centers, got 20 gallons of white wine vinegar, poured it into a bathtub, and soaked my entire body in lukewarm white wine vinegar, stinking up the house, you know. And then I drained the white wine vinegar, and I took the shampoo, and I rubbed the shampoo all over, and then I had to sit, you know, in nothing, you know, just in the bathtub with this shampoo on me, naked. You know, waiting for that 30 minutes, right? So finally 30 minutes, wash that all off. Alright, so, time to go take the drug test. True story. Well, obviously it's a true story, but the drug test was held in these buildings, seven buildings that were part of this business complex. All the buildings are these white, kind of colonial, old-style column buildings named after the founding fathers. Oh. There was a Jefferson building, a Madison building, a Washington building. I had to go take my drug test in the Jefferson building. A hemp farmer. This is not right. I get into the building. There's no indication it's medical in any way. It reminded me of a construction trailer. Like where they have that bad wood paneling and a, you know, a cheap desk or whatever. And I go in there, and there was some construction guys that were running around doing stuff, you know. Busy work, whatever it was. And then there was a lady there. Oh, you're here for your test. Oh, come on in. She's not wearing scrubs. She's got no indication of being a medical professional or anything. She's just some clerk lady sitting there. Okay, here's my papers. All right, well, go into this room over here. Sit down. All right, go in the room. Room's not got the little table with the paper, you know, the doctor paper and the little bottle of tongue depressors. No, this is just some room. All right, I'm sitting there. There's a little window over there that's open. All right, I'm sitting there, and then she comes in, and she goes, all right, well, take off your shirt. All right, take off my tie, and under my shirt, and your undershirt, too. All right, and then she reaches in the desk drawer, and she pulls out one of these cheap-ass 39-cent Bic single-bladed disposable razors, right? Peels the plastic off, and says, all right, now hold your arms out. All right. And she proceeded to shave my armpits and my chest to collect hair for the drug test. And while I'm standing there, there's a knock at the door. One of the construction guys peeks his head and goes, hey, I need to do such and such and blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, go ahead, no problem. And I'm like, hello? Kind of naked here from the waist up. And then there's people walking by that window outside. And I'm like, hello, I'm kind of naked here. And it was at that moment that I went, fuck this. I am not. I've been doing this job for 2 years. You've been underpaying me for 2 years. I've been living with no health care for 2 years. And you're going to disqualify me because my armpit hair isn't good enough for you? Well, as Johnny Paycheck said, you can take this job and shove it.
Hell yeah.
All right, that's a lie. I was going, please God, let me get through this test. Please let me pass this test. And then when I failed the test, it was, take this job. So the law is in port there. But no, I failed the test with the hair, and I tried to explain to the human resources, like, look, I work with medical marijuana patients. I'm an activist. I'm in these rooms of 200. Madeline Martinez was running Oregon Normal at the time. We had 2,100 members, 2,100 paid members. We would have 350 to 400 people per meeting. We'd do meetings twice a month. I mean, we were just busy. And as I'm in these packed rooms with medical marijuana patients that are smoking in it, and it gets onto my hair, and I didn't tell them I also smoke weed. They didn't even know that. But I pled my case, and she goes, all right, we'll give you a second chance. Second chance, go take a urine test, and if you get by with that, maybe we can do something. Because the company really wanted me. They're like, this guy's good, we're not going to let him get away. So I went to take the urine test again at the Jefferson Building, and it came back failed because it was too dilute. And I said, well, too dilute? What do you mean? Well, it's too much fluid. How much water do you drink? I don't know, eight glasses a day, 8 to 10 glasses a day like you're supposed to. Yeah, that's too dilute. All right, I'm supposed to be unhealthy to pass your test? Is that how that's supposed to work? So yeah, I didn't get the job. And from that moment on, I said, all right, y'all made a mistake here. Because I'm going to take every bit of this corporate training that you've taught me. I'm going to take every bit of this computer software knowledge that I have learned and picked up from you. I'm going to take every piece of software that you've let me install on any machine and somehow end up having a copy of it on my machine. I'm going to take every tool you gave me and every power I've learned in the corporate world, every tie I bought, every shirt I ironed, and every moment is going to be dedicated to the never, ever anybody has to get a job with their bodily fluids. Never. So, obviously, the first step of that is you got to legalize weed. Yeah, that's the first step, but... You know, when I was working for Normal, they often said, well, what are you going to do after marijuana is legalized? I'm like, jeez, get to work on the shit I really want to change. I want to get this done because it's so obvious. It's so indisputable. It's so rooted in logic, science, reason, compassion. There's no reason for it to be illegal. It's almost like I picked on marijuana prohibition because it was the weakest kid in the schoolyard. Right? This, I can kick his ass, no problem. Now let's get to drug testing, right? Now let's get to civil forfeiture. Now let's get to asset forfeiture, the wiretapping. There's so many things I want to deal with, but marijuana just seemed like the easiest and frankly the most fun one to start with. So that's why I do what I do. That's why I continue with 420 Radio and just putting out, you know, every spreadsheet and chart and article and 2 hours of talk that I can think of every day, just so, again, nobody else has to get a job through their bodily fluids, and that we can have America go back to being what America is supposed to be, right? Mind your own business, to each their own, it takes all kinds. You've heard all those sayings. And that's what America is to me, is that so long as you're not doing anything that directly hurts me, I'm cool with what you're doing. And how this country ever got away from that, I don't know, but I'm so thrilled that in what most people would consider the big, great state of Texas, super red, conservative, never going to get anywhere, that I'm talking to people like Ann Lee, who wants to convince Republicans to legalize marijuana. I'm talking to that lady Talia from Mama, who's a super Christian person who wants to talk to Christians about legalizing marijuana. I talk to all of you who want to talk about this from all sorts of different backgrounds. It gives me hope because, you know, if we can do it here in Texas, we can do it in Missouri, we can do it in Tennessee, we can do it in any state, we can do it in any country.
World.
In the world. We can do it in the whole world. That's right. So thank you for this recognition. Thank you for bringing me out here to Dallas-Fort Worth 2 or 3 times now. I'll keep coming back because I love it. And thank you.
Yeah, I was pretty excited to be able to get that recognition from Dallas-Fort Worth Normal. Thank you to Sean McAllister and Andrea Brown and Vincent Lopez and all the folks out there at DFW Normal who make every event I do there better than the one before. I'm telling you, folks, Texas could be the state that goes right to legalization without going through medical first. It could happen there. Now stay tuned, we got more highlights from the Texas Regional Normal Conference coming up, including the incomparable Mrs. Ann Lee, the mother of Richard Lee from Oaksterdam, and the founder of Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition. She was out there at the GOP Texas convention talking to pro-life people about why they should support medical marijuana. We got Chuck Diesel coming up with our Daily Toker Tunes from Nas and Damian Marley. And we'll wind things up with the Patience panel. And it's going to be an extended edition, about an hour and a half worth of Toker Talk Radio. So stay tuned.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
For Priscilla Seibin, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.